So let's set the stage. Do states or federal governments authorize energy projects? One recent case dealt with whether the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, went too far and impinged on states' rights when FERC issued a 2010 rule called Order Number 745 that requires competitive wholesale power market operators to pay end-use electric customers for commitments not to use power at certain key times. Order Number 745 also required that these payments be equal to the compensation paid to wholesale power generators for their generation. In this sense, FERC was essentially saying that megawatts equal megawatts. Another recent case claimed that FERC preempted the states of Maryland and New Jersey's efforts to incentivize the development of new power plants that would operate in wholesale power markets, and the incentives included long-term contracts. The plaintiffs in those cases argued that the states interfered with the wholesale markets. A third case dealt with the ability under state antitrust law for a state to review transactions in which wholesale natural gas industry participants regulated by FERC were pricing their services. The states, the argument of the plaintiffs in that case was that the states were preempted. What's the takeaway? Briefly, as we'll get through this presentation, the takeaways include that FERC has jurisdiction over matters that directly impact wholesale power markets and natural gas pipelines, even if FERC regulation indirectly affects matters reserved to the states under the Federal Power Act and the Natural Gas Act. This jurisdiction extends even to individual retail consumers. Second, states have jurisdiction over matters left to the states under the Federal Power Act and Natural Gas Act, provided that such state regulation of energy projects does not directly impact wholesale power and natural gas markets. Taken together, renewable energy project developers and their financiers have new guidance on the cooperative federalism at play in the various states. So let's start by understanding the Federal Power Act. The Federal Power Act states in the beginning that it is the business of transmitting and selling electric energy for ultimate distribution to the public is affected with a public interest and has subjected certain matters relating to the generation of electric energy, the transmission of electric energy in interstate commerce, and the sale of such energy at wholesale in interstate commerce to federal regulation. However, federal regulation extends only to those matters that are not subject to regulation by the states. Section 201 of the Federal Power Act restricts FERC's authority to transactions in interstate commerce, but the courts have found that due to the interconnectedness of the electricity network, all electric transactions are in interstate commerce, regardless of their contractual origin or destination, with the exception of transactions wholly within Alaska, Hawaii, and certain parts of Texas. Here's a map that shows the various markets. FERC regulates wholesale power in all 48 states except the ERCOT portion of Texas. ERCOT is a specific region of Texas that's regulated by the state, but not by FERC. There are, however, some portions of non-ERCOT Texas that are subject to FERC regulation. The Federal Power Act authorizes FERC and defines what FERC has the authority to do with respect to wholesale transmission and sale of electric power and energy in interstate commerce. It also states standards through which FERC must perform its duties. And FERC also has jurisdiction over hydropower facilities when it comes to, they license power plants that are hydrogeneration facilities, and they regulate the operations of companies that have been granted licenses to use federal waters for power generation. Under Part 2 of the Federal Power Act, FERC regulates the transmission and sale of wholesale generation in interstate commerce. including interconnection and coordination of wholesale facilities. FERC's job is to assure an abundant supply of electric energy throughout the United States at reasonable prices. The Federal Power Act gives specifically FERC jurisdiction over all facilities for the interstate transmission or sale of electric energy, and the regulatory power extends and is confined to public utilities engaged in interstate transmission and sale of wholesale power. But case law shows that FERC may have jurisdiction, even though some facilities are used both in interstate and intrastate commerce. FERC does not have jurisdiction over facilities used only for intrastate generation of electric energy, or over facilities used in local distribution, or only for the transmission of electric energy in intrastate commerce. FERC also has no jurisdiction over facilities for the transmission of electric energy consumed wholly by the transmitter or generator. This exemption from FERC jurisdiction for facilities used only locally is not limited to those which do not carry any trace of out-of-state energy. The test for exemption is whether facilities are purely for local distribution, facilities that carry no energy out-of-state. Prior cases have held, however, that in the exercise of its broad jurisdiction, broad regulatory powers, FERC gets to decide whether a particular electric power company is covered by the Federal Power Act. So the Federal Power Act basically draws a bright line between wholesale sales and transmission of electric energy vested exclusively within FERC's jurisdiction and retail sales from a local electric utility to end-use consumers, which is the exclusive jurisdiction of the states. FERC's authority, therefore, is paramount as to matters affecting the transmission of electric energy in interstate commerce, and neither a state public service commission nor state court can control the decisions of FERC when it is acting within the scope of its authority in matters involving wholesale transmission and sale of energy in interstate commerce. Furthermore, the preemptive effect of FERC jurisdiction does not turn on whether a particular matter has actually been determined by FERC. Let's take a look now at FERC Order 745, and this is a prelude to the case of FERC versus Electric Power Supply Association. Under FERC Order 745, competitive wholesale power markets run by so-called independent system operators or regional transmission organizations, ISOs or RTOs, buy power from power generators to meet demand for electricity in their grid areas. If they could find a way to encourage large reductions in usage, less wholesale power generation capacity would need to be built and bought. FERC issued Order 745 under the Federal Power Act in 2010 to require wholesale power market operators to pay electric customers for their commitments not to use power at certain key times, such as when demand is particularly high. Order 745 required that these payments for not using electric power be equal to the rates wholesale power generators are paid for generating electricity. FERC thus established the principle that negawatts equals megawatts. As I introduce you to the concept of Order 745, now is a good time to pause and explain what we mean by competitive wholesale power markets, and to also explain how much the electric utility industry has evolved since the Federal Power Act was first enacted in 1935. At the time of the enactment of the Federal Power Act, the electric utility industry was completely vertically integrated. Electric utilities owned power plants, owned electric transmission lines and distribution lines, and sold power at retail to end-use customers connected to their network of wires and distribution lines in the streets. So under the early days under the Federal Power Act, electric utilities were completely vertically integrated. They did all three things: generated power, transmitted and distributed power, and sold power. During most of the 20th century, the utilities continued to build out their system, with lines eventually extending to neighboring systems, and there became an interconnected grid of networks run by the utilities, but managed and regulated by FERC pursuant to the Federal Power Act. We already started talking about how FERC took the path down in the natural gas industry, beginning with Order 636 in 1992, to deregulate the natural gas industry. That concept started the electric utility industry to be thinking in the 90s about electric restructuring and electric deregulation as well. And the concept emerged and the thought emerged that you really only needed a natural monopoly in the business of transmission and distribution of electricity, because that's the only part of the business where you really don't want more than one company running wires in one area. It's totally inefficient, and no one would ever put in the investment to try and accomplish that. So that's a natural monopoly, and that's the logical role for the segment of the electric industry that should continue to be deemed a monopoly. But wholesale power generators could buy power plants and operate competitively in wholesale power markets. And the sale of electricity to end-use customers can also be accomplished as a retail product and a retail relationship with competitive suppliers. And so, for instance, if Walmart, Ford, or ExxonMobil wanted to find a source of electricity to just like they could with natural gas, if those companies could buy natural gas upstream at a wholesale market, they can save money perhaps by buying wholesale and delivering to their own buildings and paying only for the natural gas monopoly pipeline transmission and distribution charges. Likewise, in the electric sector, it is possible for wholesale generators to thrive and flourish in certain markets. And that's really what emerged in the 90s. Along with that process, FERC recognized that it was no longer prudent for the electric utilities themselves to run the power grid, since the industry used to own and operate the power grid and control transmission between systems themselves. Now that the industry was starting to sell off wholesale power plants, and the wholesale power plants had to have access to transmission lines to deliver power, FERC recognized the need to create regional nonprofit organizations that could organize and operate reliably the power grid in a separate role from that of the utilities. And that's where the business model of the ISOs, ISOs and RTOs, emerged during this same time. And it was in that context that Order 745 was born. On the one hand, the ISOs and the RTOs could buy competitive wholesale power from power plant generation companies or independent power producers. But on the other hand, they could turn and they could say to a collective group of customers that if you stay out of the wholesale markets during periods of peak demand, we'll pay you something less than what it would cost the competitive power generators to make that power, and you stay out of the market, and then we won't need to buy power from the wholesale power generation companies. That's the context in which Order 745 was born, and with that, FERC decided to require these competitive wholesale markets to allow demand response projects that offer into the wholesale market to be paid at the same rate as competitive wholesale power generation companies. Again, the principle of megawatts equal megawatts emerged. So demand response programs provide customers with payments to reduce their electric companies at times of peak demand. Wholesale generators, seeing FERC's position as a threat to their markets, challenged Order 745. First, they argued that FERC has no jurisdiction under the Federal Power Act under the electric consumption of end-use customers at their homes or places of business. They argued such retail use is the exclusive province of the states. They argued that the Federal Power Act states that FERC does not have jurisdiction over matters reserved to the states, and since retail sales were the province of the states, that was beyond FERC's reach. Secondly, they argued that it was arbitrary and capricious for FERC to determine that megawatts equals megawatts. After all, why should customers that make the inexpensive decision to stay out of the market be paid the same amount as companies that invest millions of dollars to erect the machinery that actually generates electricity? While it may be easy enough to see how megawatts can be treated the same as megawatts in the wholesale market, the trouble comes in, and the plaintiff's argument is, that when a retail customer like Walmart, Exxon, or Ford makes the decision to stay out of the market in response to a wholesale demand response signal, they are not buying at retail. It's not a wholesale decision to stay out of the market. It's really a retail transaction. So in that sense, they said that the Federal Power Act jurisdictional issue comes into play. In wholesale demand response, it's actually reducing retail electric purchases. FERC tried to tailor, however, Order 745 by using a functional approach that the rule regulates wholesale demand response, but the rule did not regulate retail demand response programs run by local utilities, which remains for the states to handle. So if you read the case, you'll see that FERC took effort to draw a line functionally between wholesale and retail. FERC also tried to balance cooperative federalism with Order 745 by allowing any state regulator to prohibit its customers in state from making wholesale demand response bids. So in this sense, FERC gave states veto power over applicability of wholesale demand response programs in individual states. The Supreme Court said that wholesale demand response as implemented in the rule is a program of cooperative federalism in which the states retain the last word. It is ironic, therefore, that while a state rule that could have prohibited participation in federal markets would have been preempted by conflicting with the federal scheme, but here FERC's rule explicitly makes room for the states to do just that. Under the Electric Power Supply Association case, in a 6-2 decision, with Justice Alito recused himself, and this was shortly before Justice Scalia passed away, the court sided with FERC. Order 745 is only indirectly impacting retail markets, the court said, and the order's direct effect was targeted to wholesale markets, thus putting it within FERC's jurisdiction. Justice Kagan, who wrote the opinion, said FERC had amply explained how wholesale demand response helps to achieve the Federal Power Act's dual core objectives of protecting against excessive prices and ensuring effective transmission of reliable power. The court, she said, would not read the Federal Power Act against its clear terms and overhaul demand response when it is so clearly permitted for FERC to fulfill its statutory duties of holding down prices and enhancing reliability in wholesale energy markets. So FERC struck this cooperative balance of federalism by balancing federalism versus states' rights by sticking to its core mission, protecting against excessive prices and ensuring effective transmission of reliable power, while giving states veto power to prohibit in-state customers from participating in wholesale demand response. In this sense, FERC had appropriately mitigated federalism concerns, the court said, by arguably creating regulating only wholesale demand response. Given the Federal Power Act's purposes, which no one disputed, the dual purposes, the court rejected claims that the FERC was impinging on states' rights to regulate retail sales and local utilities, although inevitably influencing the retail markets too. Order 745 does not intrude on the state's power to regulate retail sales. The FERC approved compensation that megawatts equal megawatts was the result of reasoned judgment. FERC took full account of the alternative policies proposed and adequately supported and explained its decision. The final two paragraphs of the opinion in EPSA left FERC and lawyers defending other federal agencies throughout the federal government with a hidden gem that hasn't been spoken much about or written much about since the decision came out. As the second bullet points out, FERC approved the compensation scheme in that it is the result of reasoned judgment. This is basically setting out a new standard of administrative agency review that is easier to sustain an agency's decision than, say, the applicability of the Chevron deference rule. Chevron deference, as you may know, is a 1980s decision that sets forth a standard of review when an administrative agency is acting pursuant to a federal statute. Chevron says, there's a two-part test in Chevron. If the language of the statute is clear under Chevron, then the court will not supplant its judgment for the judgment of the administrative agency charged with implementing the statute. But if the statute is ambiguous, the state can use its own judgment and review the federal agency's decision and action de novo. So here in EPSA, we have a new standard that says nothing about Chevron, and it's called reasoned judgment. In this case, the court said that the disputed issue involves both technical understanding and policy judgment. And in such a situation, the court's important but limited role is to ensure that the commission engaged in reasoned decision making. That is to say, that they weighed competing views, selected a compensation formula with adequate support in the record, and intelligently explained the reasons for making that choice. So now we have the new standard called the duty of reasoned judgment. You can expect to see this argument in future administrative agency challenges as agencies and the Justice Department defend those agencies and argue that when their decision involved both technical understanding and policy judgment, the agency's decision should be left alone as long as the agency weighed competing views, selected a view with adequate support in the record, and intelligently explained its reasoning. That's an interesting takeaway from this case, and I think you can expect to see more of that.